You're listening to Booth Talk from the Aftermovie Diner. And continuing our Ash vs. Evil Dead series of interviews, the next person we're going to speak to is an actor who has played more roles in the franchise than anyone else. In fact, he may have played more roles in this franchise than any other actor has played in a single franchise. Maybe. Don't know. You would have to go figure that out. However, he is a phenomenal comic talent, a fantastic character actor, and one of my icons for most of my life being a fan of the Evil Dead franchise. Never ever thought I would get to speak to one of the infamous and famous and awesome and wonderful Raimi brothers. But on this very show, I am exceptionally happy to present my conversation with none other than the chameleon himself, Mr. Ted Raimi. Hi there, Ted. Hello and welcome to the Aftermovie Diner. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show, sir. It really is. Been a most of my lifelong fan of yours, Bruce's, your brother's work. So it's a real treat for me to speak to you today. So thanks for agreeing to be on the show.
Oh my God, what a batch of wonderful compliments. I'll take them all, and the same to you. It's a pleasure. I'm a big fan of your podcast. It's super cool. It's a very intelligent podcast too, so I feel very lucky to be on it. Thank you.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you very much, sir. I'm honored that you've listened. So what did you think then when you first became aware that your brother Sam was making Super 8s and you wanted to be in them?
Well, the truth of the matter is, well, first, it was very exciting to have him make these movies in the house. It was wonderful. I was only in them because I was available. Really, at that point, I never wanted to be an actor. I was just a kid, you know?
Yeah.
All I ever wanted to do was read sci-fi books, read horror books, and watch movies. That's all I like doing. I was a kid that was really bullied in high school before bullying was a thing that is talked about now. It was sort of done and expected it to be done to kids like me in those days, you know?
Yeah.
So that was sort of a nice thing I could do with my brother after school. That wasn't homework, you know, so I did enjoy it. But at that point, I never really wanted to be an actor.
And you then, obviously, if we jump forward a little bit, you then visited them in Tennessee when they were making Evil Dead 1, but then again kind of got roped into production on that, playing a variety of shemps. What do you remember about that experience?
Well, I was just I was just a kid. I was maybe 14 years old, 15 years old. My father very graciously flew me down to Tennessee because he thought it'd be a good idea to watch. He's a businessman, and he thought it would be good for me to go see how a business is run. I don't think he understood that a film business is a little bit different, but nevertheless, he wasn't entirely wrong. It is a business, in fact. I went down there. I got off the plane, and as soon as I got to set, they put me to work pretty quick. So at 14, I was running craft service. I was running errands. I was even driving a car back and forth, which I shouldn't have been. Completely illegal, though I wonder if in Tennessee that was okay at that age. I'm not really sure. And then my brother met me, I remember, at the house that everybody was staying at. And in those days, that house that, was the whole crew and cast were staying in this one little rented house, tiny little Tennessee town. And and that house was basically, I remember, basically like a dorm.
Yeah.
It was like basically a bunch of 18-year-old kids who've never, ever had to do laundry in their whole lives, who've never fixed themselves a meal. You can imagine the stink and the chaos in that place. But all that said, I got there, I saw my brother. He said, "How you doing?" I said, "Great. It's great to be here. It's nice to see you're doing well." He said, "Yeah. Got any money?" I said, "What?" He goes, "I'm broke. I don't have anything left." He goes, "Did Dad give you anything?" I said, "Yeah, he gave me like 35 bucks. He goes, "Well, let me have it or we're going to starve." So we lived on that 35 bucks the next week till I left, but I was grateful to be there, and it did give me a good economic lesson, I will say that.
Yeah, and so when between that and then Evil Dead 2, did the acting bug kind of bite you, or were you already kind of thinking that way?
I wish I could tell you the acting bug did bite me at that point. It didn't. I came into acting very obliquely. most actors, I'm sure, will have a story that sounds something like this. When I was in high school, I saw, say, this kind of a movie. I saw Heathers. I saw Back to the Future. I saw Fight Club. It inspired me so much. I had to do that, and my stomach was racing. I was sweating, and I had to move out to Hollywood. That never happened to me. Instead, this is my story. I had a series of really terrible, terrible jobs. In high school, I took the worst jobs. I was a dishwasher, a busboy, a golf caddy, a production assistant. They were just awful jobs. And one day, a buddy of mine who worked in the film business there in Detroit, Michigan, where I grew up, said, "Hey, they need actors for this industrial film." I said, "What's an industrial film?" I didn't even know what that was. He said, "Well, it's an in-house movie they make for companies, you know, like Chevy, GM, like that kind of stuff." I went, "Well, okay." So I went in, I got the part right away. As you can imagine, there's a small amount of actors in Detroit, but I got the part, and I got the check 2 days later. And the check that I got for doing that half day of work of what I thought was the easiest freaking thing I'd ever done in my life was worth 3 weeks of pay being a dishwasher. And I said, "That is the last dish I will ever wash in my life." So that's how I started acting, but I never really loved it at that point. I only did it to get out of those terrible jobs I had. And later, when I was about maybe 21 or 22, I really went after it whole hog. You know, then I really grew to love it. But I never started off as a guy who wanted to be an actor. I really, you know, honestly, I started off as a guy who, believe it or not, and I know my fans aren't going to believe this, I wanted to be an Apache helicopter pilot for the Army.
Wow.
But my eyes were so bad that the only thing that the Army would let me do was repair or gas up Apache helicopters, and I didn't want that job.
No.
With being an actor.
So talking about...
I had a strange life.
No, of course. No, I understand. So talking about, like, terrible jobs, though, on Evil Dead 2... considering some of the horror stories about, you know, the Henrietta costume and the harness and everything we've seen behind the scenes stuff, it must have been one of the most grueling shoots for you that maybe you've ever done, I guess. What kept you going, and were there ever days that you just wanted to say to Sam, Bruce, and Rob, "No, I'm sorry, get some other monkey, I'm out of here"?
Oh, yes, it was all that stuff I never really wanted to turn around and tell them, "No, I'm not going to do this," because it was such a... It was like being with a bunch of pals on this crazy road trip. That's what the whole thing felt like. We were in a very isolated small town in North Carolina where we shot that movie. It was really just us. And we shot the whole thing in this abandoned high school there in Wadesboro.
Yeah.
And it felt like just a bunch of buddies all getting together and having a great, great time. So it was the hardest thing I'd ever done in my life acting. There's no doubt about it. I nearly passed out, you know, 3 or 4 times. I was exhausted. I was miserable, burning up. I couldn't breathe. I had to breathe through an oxygen mask frequently to keep from passing out a lot. And I was blind and all that stuff, you know, with hours of makeup on and stuff. So it was really hard. But no, I never really wanted to not do it because Bruce and Rob were so encouraging, you know, and at that point I'd already known those guys for 5 or 6 years, you know, back in 87. So, they were already old pals of mine then, you know, during the Reagan administration, you know, so it just felt like a bunch of pals. It was incredibly hard. And then now flash forward 30 years to now to Evil Dead, the television show, you know, and it feels much the same. It was really, really hard to be in that costume. Again, it was just as hard as it was. The studio is much cooler and air-conditioned now.
Yeah.
So that wasn't a problem. And you know, there was a nice trailer for me to get into and all that stuff. But it was really almost as hard. But because Bruce Campbell was there, because Rob Tappert was there, it was all worth it. And honestly, I don't think any of those fight scenes that I did in, you know, in episode 9 there, would have even, you know, played or worked without Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, no, of course.
You know, that Henrietta, I think I'm very proud to have played that character, and I can't wait to see what the fans are going to think for episode 10 with her. But as far as 209 is concerned, you know, it so much of it is contingent upon fighting Bruce Campbell, you know, who is like the craziest. Bruce Campbell is an anomaly in an actor, and I mean it this way. He's got a leading man face, you know. He looks like a classic handsome leading man, you know. Yeah. He's like an older James Dean or something, you know. He really has a leading man look, but he's got the sensibilities of a character actor. And that makes him crazy and irresistible to watch, you know. And you get a guy like that doing a fight scene with a monster, it is just the wackiest, you know, combination I think you could ever maybe hope for. So so I'm grateful that it all worked out, you know, and I'm grateful we're back after 30 years. So it's crazy. It's like a crazy high school reunion.
And it's awesome. Like, I don't know if you've been seeing, but sort of every single week people are saying, this is the best episode. And then the next week they're saying, no, wait, this is the best episode. I mean, it's off the charts, pleasing everybody. And it's inventive. And the way that they're able to maintain the cinematography and the style of it and the characters and all the rest of it is just incredible. And, you know, I was gonna build to you playing Henrietta again, but let's talk about that briefly. What was, when they first came to you and said, okay, we've had this idea, obviously you're playing Chet throughout season two, but then you're going to reprise Henrietta. On one hand, you must have felt like, oh, I've got to get into that suit again. But then obviously, like you say, you have all you have Bruce Campbell, you have Rob Tabbitt, you have all this great goodwill around you to do that, all the fans wanting that as well, you know. So what was that when they first came to you and suggested that you reprise the role?
I was delighted. I was delighted because, look, I'm a character actor. That's what we live for.
Yeah.
I would, if they said you're doing 14 parts in this season, I would have jumped at that too. That is what I live for, to do. And all character actors like me live to do that shit. So yeah. It's great. I was glad to have to play a new character in this franchise, you know, Chet, and then revisit an old one. And Chet makes six, I think now I've played six different characters in the Evil Dead franchise, so that has been crazy. I think that might be a record for any actor. I'm not sure if there's another actor that's played six different parts in three different movies, but I have, so I'm a very, very lucky guy.
But you know what it means, Ted? It means that there is no reason that you can't come back in season three as a different character, season four as a different character. I mean, put a wig and a mustache on you. I mean, you play three characters in My Name is Bruce, so, you know, you can do it. If anyone can do it, you know.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. I hope that they do. I was certainly very grateful to Craig DeGregorio, the head writer, to write this part in for me as Chet, you know, and then, you know, getting to rewrite Henrietta along with all these other amazing staff writers they had last season. And who knows, maybe this, the new group, whoever they may be in the writer's room right now, will maybe want to write one for me, but who knows. But in any case, I really had a wonderful time playing both parts this season, and it's very rare for an actor to get to do that, and I'm feel very lucky to have, you know. And I'm glad to be able to move ahead with this franchise, you know.
Yeah,
it's a wonderful thing that this has been revived, and it's been revived with some fine new talent, you know. Like, look, we're the old kids in high school, you know, and then there's the two new kids, which is Ray Santiago and Dina DiLorenzo. Both those guys are great, you know.
Amazing.
Both those guys are amazing. They're funny, especially, you know, they're both very funny. And then Dana also is funny and also can do these crazy, hilarious voices. And she's sort of a savant at doing them.
Yeah.
You know,
her YouTube videos are
pretty incredible.
Oh yeah, completely.
Yeah, they are. They're very funny. She really does some tremendous ones. And in fact, now what I'm doing on the show is this last season I have those two actors, of course. Excuse me, those two parts I played were one thing I did, but then another thing is I directed a lot of promo pieces for Starz this year. I was very lucky, and they let me direct a bunch of these things. And one of them is Miss DiLorenzo doing all of her voices in that one piece. You can find it now if you go to Facebook. You'll find it there. It's just her just doing a million different. She does Ash. She does Pablo. It's pretty funny stuff.
Oh no, I love that. Yeah, no, I saw that earlier today. That had me laughing at work while I was sat at my desk.
Oh, thank you.
You were saying about how the writers crafted Chet, but how much of Chet was sort of your input or riffing with your old friends and the cast, and how much of it was on the page?
Well, Craig, the head writer, created Chet, and but what you saw on camera with Bruce and I, that was all scripted dialogue for the most part. We threw in a couple lines, but most of that's just the brilliant writers doing their stuff. But Bruce and I have such an old, we've been in so many movies and TV shows together that we're actors that don't really have to warm up or get to know one another.
Right.
You know, you get to know another actor's, you know, strengths and weaknesses really well. And if you're acting with them a long time, you'll prop up their weaknesses while letting them, you know, give you all of their strengths, you know, and that's what you do as actors. You know, you help each other out. And so with Bruce, it's easy, you know, it's like putting on an old shoe. It's just, oh, you know, here we go again, you know, like we've been doing for 30 years, you know, so it's fun. But with Bruce, his energy is always so high that you don't ever have to worry about it being dull or boring for a second.
Yeah.
You just walk on a set. He starts at 110 degrees Fahrenheit. He just starts. He'll blast it,
yeah.
You know. And so it's great. You don't have to ever worry about losing energy around him. And I don't think any scenes ever do. I think he's a big part of why that show is so dynamic. I really do.
Oh yeah, no. I mean the hectic pace, not only in the plotting, but also just in the characters and the jokes and the gore and everything else that's going on in the show is it's breathtaking. You get to the end of the 30 minutes and you're suddenly like, wait a minute, that was a whole 30 minutes? No, I want some more. You know, so that whole Rob Tappert saying about leave them wanting more is true every single week. I could take I could take 20 episodes a season quite easily if that was possible.
I think, you know, and I think that was Rob Tappert's and Bruce Campbell's idea that I think it should be a 30-minute show and not a 60-minute show. And I know that they had, when they were pitching the show around town, other suitors, you know, other networks that really wanted it. But most networks want their I guess they want their Emmy shows type shows, you know. They want shows that are an hour so that they can get noticed and stuff. But Rob and Bruce didn't feel that it could be sustained well enough for an hour. And I would tend to agree, you know. And so if you, like you said, you really do want more after these things are done. And I that's a testament to those guys, you know.
Oh, yeah, completely. And I was never someone who was, you know, you see a lot of people online saying, oh, I wish it was now, I wish it was now. I was never one of those guys because, to me, having the TV show, even if it ran three episodes, would have been amazing. To have now 20 episodes and you know, we've heard about the third season, so we're going to get 30 episodes. Like, that is just, you know, that's beyond our wildest dreams. So I'll take anything. It's fantastic. And the fact that it is as... The fact that it is the quality that it is, you know, breathtaking and incredible. Just the level of workman, like just workmanship and thought and fun and passion and everything that goes into it visibly is a delight each week, I think. So with Chet, it's interesting. There was a lot of different parts to Chet. Like, he was hilarious, but he was also damaged. You had that wonderful kind of dark soliloquy about drinking to forget at the bar, which was sort of kind of darkly humorous, but also tragic in its way. You have all the comedy aspects, but then you have also, we find out that you've been in love with Cheryl for your whole life, this kind of lost love thing. What was the challenge in putting all that into a character that is not, first of all, is not like the main character, but secondly, you know, is in this 30-minute hectic, fast-paced show, so you just have to kind of get it on screen and go. What were the challenges of doing that?
You want to be as honest as possible. That's all to it. You know, for those moments that are explaining the character, you be as honest as possible, because with Ash, of course, there's so much comedy coming up. It's really not necessary to spice those moments up. Also, without those few serious moments, I think the comedy wouldn't work as well. You wouldn't know why he is the way he is, you know.
Right.
So
no,
you
completely.
Do need that. And, you know, and so it's a little bit more of a challenge for us character actors to do that. And I only say this because leads have many years to develop a character. You know,
yeah.
For example, say the character of Kelly or Pablo has 3 or 4 years, 5 years, hopefully, you know, you finally have fleshed out everything within that character. And so each shot can be a rather subtle moment. You can reveal a little bit or nothing at all, a little bit or nothing at all. But I only had maybe a minute and a half of screen time to explain everything that other actors might have years to do. So you have to be very, very honest, I think, and be very, very direct with those beats. And that's I think that's the best way I can answer that. You know, it's a little more challenging, but also a lot more fun.
Yeah, well, you pulled it off, man. And that scene in the car with Bruce, when you're having the back and forth, you know, I had to watch it over. It's so quick and funny. I had to watch it over 3 times, but I was laughing each time. It was fantastic. So going back a little to Army of Darkness, you play multiple characters in Army of Darkness, like we've been talking about. You
yeah,
do a lot of
right.
characters throughout
yeah.
the franchise. Was that yeah. always planned, or was that just sort of more of a necessity once the shoot started and Sam needed kind of more parts fleshing out?
The latter, not the former. It would happen this way. Usually I would be sleeping in bed, and I'd get a call like at 10 o'clock that night, and Sam would say, hey, tomorrow there's this part of this brave warrior. He's up on top of the parapet with Marcus Gilbert, you know, the he plays Arthur. And he says, can you be that guy? I'd go, okay. So I'd come into the studio, and they'd put me up. They'd put a scar on my face and a patch on my eye, and I'd do this bit. And by lunch, I'd go home. They'd shoot it all out in 3 or 4 hours, that shot.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Then another week later, he'd come up, hey, you need to be the frightened general that you know, talks to, yells into Bill Moseley's face that we have to run and blah, blah, blah. So it would happen that way. So they
right.
were all sort of happenstance, and it was a lot of fun, actually. It was like doing improv, you know,
yeah.
It was like going back to my improv days. It's, you never know what character you were playing until the night before, you know. It's sort of like, it's like picking numbers out of a hat, you know, to see if you got lucky or not.
Yeah, of course.
There's not much preparation you can do. But, you know, that sort of frenetic energy that you get from that creates a similar vibe on screen.
Yeah.
You know, the oh, my God, what's going to happen, what's going to happen? And then you shoot it so fast, and even though maybe the shots aren't visually exactly what maybe the director would want, or because we have to go so quickly in this, you know, it's a moderately budgeted movie, the energy that is imbued in that sort of stuff is, I think, sort of priceless for all the actors, you know, and we all loved it. We all loved it, you know, as far as that was concerned. And I think that kind of energy, that frantic, wonderful energy, you know, of everyone just, you know, trying to get it right the first time and not quite knowing what's going to happen next translates very well, I think, into television, and especially with this show. And I think the producer, Rob Tappert, and the directors here, including Tony Tilsey and Rick Jacobson, have really, really kept that vibe alive. And I think it translates very well into the show, if I may say.
Oh, no, definitely. Each week it's like, I mean, I think one reviewer years ago said about Evil Dead 2 that it was a twisted Warner Brothers cartoon. But each week, Ash versus Evil Dead, to me, there's something that Bruce is the Tex Avery wolf. You know, the Tex Avery cartoon wolf that wolf whistles
a bit. Oh, most definitely. That's right. He's the coyote. He's Wile E. Coyote.
Right, right, right. And so to see that each week, you know, I grew up watching Warner Brothers cartoons way more than Disney. And so I was a big fan of, you know, Daffy Duck and Wile E. Coyote and people like that. So this show is, to me, an adult blending of that. And all the stuff that I want from Evil Dead 1, so all the serious stuff from Evil Dead, all the scary, serious stuff from Evil Dead 1, all the splatstick from Evil Dead 2, and all the, you know, braggadocio and ridiculousness from Army of Darkness. And it the way they cram
yeah.
it all in is wonderful. And it runs like those old cartoons
so
did, you know?
It's an excellent analogy. I agree with you. And I think also you could argue that for those of you who are listening now who are you know, in the United States, of course, it's a classic American road trip movie.
Yes.
You know, It's a road trip story. It's in a thousand. You know, really, the tradition of being on a road trip in America and being, you know, making that your life adventure. That your, you know, it goes back to Mark Twain. You know, all of his. It really goes back that far. And now, you know, here we are. You get in a car to find out who you are. You know, and it's kind of a fun thing. I don't know why though. It translates so well. Internationally, it's a very strange thing because international things do translate well into America and others don't, but that one really does, and it's pretty cool, you know?
Yeah,
and Ash really is like Bob Hope. He reminds me of Bob Hope. He's right, like a modern-day Bob Hope.
In the road movies, yeah, of course. And it's funny, I don't know whether this is part of it. I mean, obviously I'm from England originally, but I now live in New York, and one of the reasons why my website and my show is called The After Movie Diner is that the things that were attractive to me about America growing up were very much what we're talking about, that kind of Americana thing, the road trips, the old cars, the, you know, the dive bars, the music, the literature, and all that goes into, you know, even the idea of a cabin in the woods is a very kind of American idea. And, you know, the fact that it pervaded that horror wave at the end of the 70s, early 80s is fascinating, but also like very obvious and natural in a way that would be where Americans would retreat to get their scares and fear, you know?
I think so too. And I think that credit, I have to say, goes all the way back to George Romero, who first came up with putting a cabin in the woods. You know, initially, of course, that story of multiple zombies was Richard Matheson's idea for The Last Man on Earth, you know, his I Am Legend story, but which took place in the suburbs. But then George Romero put it out in the country and really gave it a whole new flavor. And I think Sam was very inspired by that when he made Evil Dead.
So I have one more question for you, sir. You've been absolutely fantastic. Thanks so much. But as a...
Oh, my God. Thanks for having me. Please, anything.
As a young man, as a early teenager, I was a big fan of Bruce Campbell, but I was also a big fan of yourself. And I would hunt down...
Thank you.
Because I was in the UK and I would hunt down VHS... on weird like collectors VHS stores, because you couldn't just walk into a shop and buy some of the stuff that you guys were in at that time. And I remember going to a store and they had a big dusty old catalog, and they, in order to order Lunatics: A Love Story, because I'd read about it, but I couldn't get hold of it. And I finally got hold of it. They ordered it from a warehouse in the US and shipped it over, and it felt very exotic and exciting and interesting. So I wanted it at the time.
Yes.
I was like 14. I was like, wow, Lunatics: A Love Story in my hand on VHS. That's exciting. So just wanted to ask you about Lunatics, because it's always been a favorite
please.
Of mine. Josh Beck is a great director. I hope they, you know, get Josh on some of the Ash versus Evil Dead stuff like they did with Xena and Hercules. But Lunatics: A Love Story, what was it like to star? Because it was your first big starring role, right? Or first big starring role in a movie through, yeah?
It was absolutely my first big one. And it was the only starring role that I really loved to do so much, because I was starring in it, but I was a character actor in that movie. You know, I was leading the picture, and I tried to star in two or three more other movies, but I found them so dull, because to carry a movie, if you have to have a star mentality, you have to not mind being explanatory, expository, and I was never interested in that. But that movie, I thought, was so... I'm so proud of that movie, and thank you so much for mentioning it, and I'm glad you liked it. And Josh Becker wrote and directed that thing, and it's the sweetest, weirdest little movie I've ever done, and it still resonates with fans, you know. My God, it's almost been 40 years now, you know.
Yeah.
Like 30 years ago we shot that thing, 1990 or something. And it really resonates with people, and I was very proud of it. We shot that, strangely enough, in another abandoned high school. That set for Lunatics was shot in an abandoned high school in Pontiac, Michigan, which is a suburb of Detroit.
Yeah.
So we shot almost the whole thing there. And it was a crazy little movie about this agoraphobic who one night in his lonely apartment in Los Angeles gets a random call from a girl who dialed a wrong number, and she is a runaway, and they meet and fall in love, you know. So the theme, it's a very sweet theme that there's somebody out there for you, even if you're an insane, locked in agoraphobic, you may still have a chance.
Of course.
So
and I think
it's a crazy little movie.
Some of the stuff, some of the psychology of the movies, I think in a weird way is way ahead of its time, because I think that if it came out I don't know, now, and was sort of more like a kind of one of those mumblecore indie movies, but it, you know, still had its sensibility. Yeah. People would kind of like it more. It would have that quirky aspect to it that people kind of gravitate towards.
I agree. I think it was Josh made that movie probably 15 years too early. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. It would have been, that's well put. It would have been a good mumblecore picture. Yeah,
but
I agree.
It needs to be revisited. It needs to be re-released. So if there's any plans between you and Josh to be able to get it out on DVD or Blu-ray or something, that would be amazing.
My goodness, we would love to do that. I think, you know, Sony has that movie now. And we Josh and I, when we talk now and again, we shake our heads. We're like, you know, Sony has released, you know, whatever, like, I don't know, Trancers 19 or whatever they're releasing on DVD, but for whatever reason, they're not releasing that movie, and I don't know why, but if anyone's listening to this, please shoot a Twitter, email, whatever, over to Sony and ask them to release it on DVD, because, boy, I sure would like to see that re-released. I really would.
Well, Ted, thank you so much for answering all of my questions. Thank you so much for being a guest on the After Movie Diner. It's been a thrill.
Thanks for having me. I've been dying to be on your show for the longest time. I feel very, very honored. So it is me who thanks you. Thank you, sir. It's been a pleasure.
So, well, have a great evening. Take care of yourself.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Well, that was definitely a conversation for the ages as far as I'm concerned. You can hear me all through that interview geeking out, but I'm happy to let my nerd flag fly on this occasion because I really have been a fan for a long time, and it was a real thrill to talk to Ted. If you want to see more from the After Movie Diner for our Ash versus Evil Dead coverage, go over to aftermoviediner.com. Click on the menu button in the top left-hand corner and pull down to reviews, and underneath reviews you'll see we have an entire page dedicated to all our Ash versus Evil Dead stuff. So that includes reviews of all the episodes, interviews with some of the cast members, articles we've written, news items, all sorts of good stuff. So if you're a fan like we are of Ash versus Evil Dead, head on over to aftermoviediner.com, check in the reviews section, and look up all our Ash versus Evil Dead stuff. That would be fantastic. And if you've enjoyed this interview, again, on aftermoviediner.com, look up interviews and you will find all sorts of good stuff. Not only did we speak to Ray Santiago and Dana DiLorenzo and Ted Raimi from Ash vs. Evil Dead, but we've spoken to Michael Ironside, William Sadler, Clint Howard, Fred the Hammer Williamson. There's some great interviews over on the site. Do check it out. And thank you, as always, for listening.